Valar Morghulis.
Valar Dohaeris.
Welcome to Southside Westeros, where we explore the world of Game of Thrones. From the Fist of the First Man to the Catacombs of the Red Keep, no secrets will be safe from us. Enter and forever be changed.
There is only one God, and his name is Death. And there is only one thing we say to Death. Not today.
Hello and welcome back to Southside Westeros. I'm your host, D. Paul, your master of whispers, and today is episode 13, lucky number 13, and it's part one in our series, The Best of the Worst. And today we talk about none other than the she-wolf, Catelyn Stark. Yes, yes, one of my favorite people. Facetiously, of course. I have made many assertions about this woman, and I plan to go over those today, and I will present my case. And as always, I leave it up to you, my listener and dearest friend, to come up with your own assertions. I'm just going to present information. Now, we are going off of the show, but I will kind of backtrack, give you a little bit of the book to give you an idea of who we're dealing with here. Now, the she-wolf. Catelyn Stark. Well, let me give you a little kind of background on this young lady. And Michelle did a wonderful job in portraying her. If the showrunners meant to present her in this manner and fashion, then they did a good job. If they didn't, then we'll see. Now, Catelyn, for being a young lady of the North, she was considered beautiful, fair-skinned, amber hair, all the virtues a rugged Northman would want in a woman with long fingers and high cheekbones. She resembled her mother, Mensa, and it was said that... Rob, Bran, Rickon, Sansa all got their good looks from her. Now, she tries to follow the words of House Tully, family, duty, and honor. Or that's what she presents to you, and in turn what the viewer is presented by the showrunners, that this woman, this she-wolf, she's fiercely protective of her cubs and would do anything to protect them, and maybe that was her intention. Maybe that's what she meant to do, and she just failed horribly. And she did fail, people. There's no doubt about it. Not only did she fail, but she led her family astray. They were run amok, led asunder, if you will. They were destroyed from within by this woman who was supposed to protect them. So she did the opposite of family, duty, and honor. The opposite of pride, honesty, honorability, all of these things. And she was unprepared to sit at the head of such a noble household. Now, I get it. I get it. These are very vicious charges I am levying against the matriarch of the great Stark clan, the mother of one of the most beloved characters in all of Game of Thrones, Arya Stark, the mother of Robb Stark, the young wolf, the mother of Brendan Stark, the three-eyed raven. Yes. Sansa Stark, the Queen of the North, this is their mother. She birthed them onto the world. She suckled them at her teats. The she-wolf. The milk of the northern wolf coursed through her veins and were given to her children so that they may go on and do great things in the world of Westeros. However, the great things that her children did had nothing to do with her. If anything, the treatment of Jon Snow would be the only redeeming quality she has. Huh? Yes. The only redeeming quality that she had, because if she wasn't such a vile, evil, wicked stepmother, then maybe Jon Snow would not have been the upstanding citizen he was and able to fulfill his promise as Azor Ahai. Yes, people, yes. Her only redemption is in one of the worst and most deplorable acts that she outlined herself to her daughter-in-law. Yes, yes. Now I'm making this woman out to be the devil incarnate. Aren't I? Am I or aren't I? You be the judge. But we're going to go through this and we're going to talk about Kat. And maybe you'll see my point. Maybe I'll get hate mail. Maybe we'll have another podcast on it. I don't know. But let's start about it. Let's talk about it anyway. Now, let's give her a little background. She's the eldest daughter of Hoster Tully, the Lord Paramount of the Trident, Lord of the Riverrun, and the head of House Tully. She was anointed with the seven oils and the scepter of Riverrun. She had two older brothers who both died in infancy, so thus making her the oldest, causing her father to regard her as his heir, really. So this is kind of where it starts here. If Kat's brothers had survived and lived, then she would have known her place. It's starting to make sense to you. Immediately, I see those wheels turning. But you have to know this in order to understand what was presented to us in the show. So she is known by her father as the heir until the birth of Edmure. So until Edmure comes in, she's pretty much treated like a boy. Now, we're already talking about the rugged, frozen north people. The rugged, frozen north. So it's already a tough, just rigid and hard environment. Everything is hard and cold. And you got to be hard and cold to survive it. And she is not only hard and cold, but she's also given this masculinity in being referred to as the heir to her father, who was a very tough man in him, his own right and his own regard. And Edmure kind of makes a little sense now, right? Why he is what he was, but we'll discuss him in a later podcast. I don't think he'll get his own, but he'll have a portion of one that's coming up and you'll like it. She also had a sister, Lysa. And she was 2 years younger than her. So Kat, being the older sister and being masculine, probably didn't treat her very well. Probably teased her a lot, bullied her, took from her. So you can understand why Lysa would later on have the feelings she had towards her and be able to be manipulated so easily against her and everything that came from her. Now, her mother died in childbirth with her fourth son, who also died shortly after. So this is, again, this a lot of bad luck surrounding the Tullys, but a lot of bad luck surrounding houses in general back then. Remember, this is AC, this is medieval time, not a lot of medical advancements. More so superstition and the words of maesters who wanted to present themselves as Scotty from Star Trek. I can't do it. You can only believe in me. I'm the only one that can save the realm. A maester. I have all the knowledge and all of the medical amazements. I have the nightshade of poppy and all these things. You know, that's all you had. So. Losing a mother in childbirth wasn't really an amazing thing, right? It wasn't something that you didn't see almost every day. So again, but this, you see this in a lot of the masculine, tough women. You see this, the taking away of the mother figure. And in this society especially, the mother figure is where you get most of your tenderness. You don't get it from your father. Your father is teaching you how to survive. Your father is teaching you how not to get killed, how to kill or be killed or be safe. The mother is who gave you that soft hand, that shoulder to cry on, that shoulder to lean on, that comfortable, warm spot in the midst of all this cold north. And so because she lost her mother at a young age and was given this masculine air kind of thing, even when her brother came, she was the boss. And now she's the mother to Liza. Yeah, yeah. She had no tenderness or no softness inside her. She was tough as they came. She had the personality of a brick. This is Catelyn Stark as a child. Now, she's raised in River Run, and she was close to Liza because, again, she had to be this kind of mother figure. And she would play with them, and as well as her father's ward at the time, a little wispy character named Peter Baelish. See, it's all coming together. And just as her younger siblings and Peter were told to listen to her, they were told that she would be the kind of authoritarian figure in their life. And it's not really a focal point of it, and they kind of go against it. But I think there were some things that went on with Brendan and Lord Hoster. There were some things that went on here, okay? There was there was something that went on with Catelyn. Her mother's dead. Her father's off doing things. Her and Liza are here. There's more to the relationships going on in River Run at this time than we're really given eye into, especially with Peter Baelish. I'm not saying they did anything, but I think there were stolen moments, maybe. There were not puppy love necessarily, but maybe some adolescence coming into our own. She had a very close relationship with her father as well. And this is according to Catelyn, you know. It's said that he cherished her best of all his children, and you would kind of figure that's true. Whenever he would ride off to battle, he would tell Catelyn to look for him. He would turn around. He wanted to see her. And they kind of allude to this later on, but I think the showrunners also had some lazy writing because they didn't really focus on this relationship. And I think it would have helped to humanize her, although I still think she's a filthy character. I think it would have helped to humanize her. But it just goes to show you, you know, what kind of made her this hard kind of character who was created in this frozen north. And she was, again, as I told you in Ned's podcast, if you hadn't listened to Ned's podcast, please go back because I get into this. But she was originally betrothed to Brandon Stark. Brandon Stark was the best of the best. He was that guy. He was Robb Stark. He was made for this. He wanted all the smoke. He didn't care. He wanted to be the boss man. He knew I'm going to take over the North, and I got to be the one everyone looks up to, and that's who she wanted to be with. But then Brendan died. So then she had to be with Eddard Stark. Now, you have to understand that when she was betrothed to Brendan, she started to crave power. And this is also a common theme amongst some of these powerful women presented to you. They all had this common theme that they craved power. They craved equality, craved equality. That's, I didn't mispronounce it. I was trying to do a Daffy Duck voice. I'm sorry. It didn't work. But they craved equality. They wanted to be equal to the males of the society. They saw themselves as viable candidates for leadership. You didn't just see this with Catelyn. You saw this with Cersei. You saw it with Daenerys. You saw it with Ilya Sand. You see this over and over again. And I think this is a bit of feminism that George R.R. throws in there for you. He throws in this feminist theme to let you know. I think Brienne of Tarth and Arya, all of this is his goal of throwing feminism into a very misogynistic society and a misogynistically themed story. So let's go where we meet her. Could we spend a little time? I'm showing you who she is, and we're going to show you where she meets. So we have to remember that we meet Kat in Winterfell advising Ned. And the advice she gives Ned is counter to the advice in the book. In the book, she is really for the merging of the Stark and the Lannister households, especially Sansa and Joffrey, so that one day they would live in King's Landing. She wanted to go down to King's Landing. See, that was her ambition. And I think if they had presented this in the show that way, her character's choices would have made more sense. But because they didn't, then I have to look at her choices as stupid. I'm sorry. It's stupid. It's stupid. So we're not gonna rewrite history here. We're not gonna get into events we've already talked about in terms of King's Landing. But we're gonna talk about everything moving forward. So Bran is in a coma. She stays by Bran's side for 8 days. I don't know what the significance of the 8 days was. And any mother that I've talked to says they would have never left Bran's side until he woke up. So that's our first indication that Kat does not solely give in to just being a mother. She doesn't just solely give in to being the Lady of Winterfell. She wants more. She wants to pick up a sword and exact revenge. She wants to, and it's more so than the revenge of a mother. It's she wants to go out here and she wants to be the one to get whoever did this to her son. But is it that someone did something to her son, or is it that she feels her pack was attacked and she has to now go on the offensive? I think it's the latter, people. Because if it was really about your son, you're not leaving. You're not leaving his side at all. Revenge be damned. It's about this kid and whether he's going to live or die. No, Kat, it was about them coming after you. And then what put the cherry on top is when the assassin came after Bran. Now, remember, Kat didn't like those wolves, but that wolf saved Bran, right? So if you want to go into her instincts suck all around because she didn't even like the wolves. But the wolves saved her and Bran. And after that knife struggle, she got in her feelings. She got in her feelings, and that was all Littlefinger needed to push her over the edge when he lied to her and told her that the dagger she had was Tyrion's when, in fact, it was his, and he orchestrated everything from the beginning. But because she has such stupid instincts, not only did she not realize that Peter Baelish was playing for the other side, she also offered up Ned to him. Because she didn't really care about Ned either. But, again, I digress. Going a little further, we're going to get there. I'm going to slow it down a little bit, take it to where we are. And so, we know what she's done from the last podcast, which is she went to the inn at the crossroads. She ran into Tyrion, who recognized her, by the way. So I want to remind you that I think a lot of people forget that portion of that scene because so many other prominent things happen. But she initially was attempting to go unnoticed. Why? Because she wasn't supposed to be on the road anyway. The Lady of Winterfell on the road without an army? Come on. Again, another move that made no sense. You are the Lady of Winterfell. Your husband has our enemies everywhere. You had to be begged by Sir Roderick not to go on your own. She's lucky she even made it. So when Tyrion recognizes her, that's when she took him hostage. So she, when her taking Tyrion hostage, there was no thought into that. It was instinct. It was a momentary thought. And what happened from that? Your husband died. You didn't think about the repercussions. You're a Lady of Winterfell. You understand these things. You knew what those repercussions were. That's the queen's brother. They can't allow you to keep him. And then you take him to Lysa, right? Which was the only move you could make because you couldn't make it back to Winterfell. And even if you did, Winterfell couldn't stand up to an attack from the Lannister army. Not at all. So we go through all of these things that happen with the trial by fire. The trial by combat, Tyrion. You know, they fight the clans and all of that. And now let's fast forward, okay? Now, Rob has marched south because Ned's been arrested because she has taken Tyrion hostage. They're unaware that Tyrion has escaped. However, it was the catalyst needed. It was the powder keg needed to kick off this war. Now, one good thing did happen, which was Brendan Tully left House Arryn because Lysa refused to help against the Lannisters, even though they were House Stark's bannermen, which gave the Tullys, I mean, they eventually lost everything, but it was, they were able to get the Umbers involved and all of that. So this is where we get to another mistake and the biggest mistake she made, attempting to advise a general in war. Kat, what made you qualified to advise Rob in war? Nothing. You're his mama. You're his mother. So you thought that you knew best in war. So when Rob was about to place Lord Greyjoy Umber in command of the infantry to engage Tywin, Catelyn convinced him to anoint Roose Bolton, because he's cold and calculated. Now, knowing what we know now, there couldn't be two further men. And one might say, well, you know, they won a lot of battles with Roose Bolton. He didn't, because remember what Roose told Lord Frey in our past podcast. The boy was too arrogant. He ignored his advice at every turn. So if she had kept her mouth shut and allowed Greyjoy Umber to command the infantry, Rob might still be here today. Right? So she leaves. Well, Rob wants her to return north. But she stays with the army because her father's dying and she wanted to go see him. Now, here's where she makes her second mistake. They get to the Green Fork. And of course, we talked about this, negotiated with Lord Frey. She's supposed to negotiate with him. Now, she enters into the negotiation and gives everything away and gets nothing. I mean, she promised everything, Rob's hand in marriage, to the phrase for a bridge. The future king and the king of the north, you give away his hand for a bridge. Usage of a bridge that you could have just taken because it's the phrase. But again, Kat, again, you don't know your place. This is over your head. And you don't even know what you want. You just want to be in the mix. You want to be a baller, shot caller, 20-inch rims. You give this away. And not only did you give Rob away, you give Aya away, who you left, by the way, to come out and play general, to play war. You left Bran in a coma, Rickon without his mother and father, and older brother in a coma, and older brother gone, and Jon Snow gone, and Sansa gone, and Aya. I'm sorry, you didn't leave her there. That's right. You stayed behind while she went to King's Landing. Right, so Aya's playing with cats and a dancing master right now. Now, she is present during Rob's victory at Whispering Wood. And after the news gets to them that Ned was killed by Joffrey, she's then filled with grief, but maintains her composure for the sake of her son. This is what I want to show you. She wasn't distraught that Ned was gone, because there was still a chance to get what she really wants, which is power. See, Kat is not much different than Cersei. She was just on a different side. She argues for peace with the South so that Sansa and Aya might be more easily brought to safety. Now, look at everything she's done. Look at everything you've started. You started this, and now you want to urge for peace because you didn't think, oh, yeah, I had a daughter. Oh, no, two. Where did they go? Oh, they're in the South. Did she think about that when she kidnapped Tyrion? Did she think about that when she tried to kill him? She didn't think about any of those things. I think her children were the last things on her mind. Now, she advises Rob against his plan. Advises is a strong word, right? She's telling him, do not send. This is where I think the one thing he should have listened to her. She advised him against sending Theon Greyjoy to the Iron Islands. I thought it was a stupid idea, too. Again, the Iron Islands don't do anything for anybody. So there was no upside to this. Theon could have served you better at his side as a brother. But Rob didn't listen, so he sends him on his way. So this is where Kat gets the ideal to go ally herself with Renly Baratheon. Again, stupid idea. Now, they did have the money behind them, and I'm sure that's what she was looking at. But Renly is in no way, shape, or form anybody's king. He's not. No, those guys, and that could be seen because his men dispersed immediately upon Renly's death. And it's weird to me that all of these moves she was making, people still found some way to defend her. Now, again, guys, I get it. You're thinking, wow, I'm being very tough on her, right? She's making decisions on the fly. She's trying to do what she can do. No, she should have stayed her butt in Winterfell. It's what she should have done and allow this thing to play out. That's what she should have done. But she left Winterfell to exact some kind of revenge on her own. She wanted to be the instrument of destruction. But her leaving Winterfell started a chain of events that led to Arya being homeless and traveling the world, Sansa being abused by not only Joffrey, but by Ramsay Bolton, Rob getting killed along with his wife, her husband getting killed. This is what this started. And look at the chain reaction of houses that fell because Kat didn't stay in the house. It bewilders me at how horrendous she was at this game. The worst, she couldn't read people. She couldn't read situations. She was only instinctive and reactory. And that's what led to her death. Now she tries to get Renly and it all goes bad. You know, Stannis does his blood magic thing. She's there with Brienne. They send in the creature. It kills Renly and they have to run. Brienne gets her out of there. Then Catelyn takes Brienne into her service. She disapproves of the admittance of small folk into Riverrun by her brother. They bring Ned's bones, which is weird to me, but because the time frame was a little off for Ned to be bones already in a box, but you know, she talks Hollis into returning them to Winterfell, and then she and Brienne remain at the castle of the Battle of the Fords. She then hears about her two youngest sons' murders at the hands of Theon, and this is when she gets bloodlust at this point because she feels that it's not her fault, it's someone else's fault, but if she had stayed in Winterfell, they both would be alive. This is when she meets with Jaime Lannister and makes another mistake. Kingslayer admits to her that he's the one that pushed Bran. But he tells her he didn't send the killer to kill Bran. He did push him, though. Now, she frees Jaime in an attempt to exchange him for her daughters, who she has put in this situation. In doing so, puts Rob in a situation and pretty much destroys his position and guarantees his death. Right? She's placed under house arrest. And Rob, again, he's in a position here because this is his mother. And his bannermen want revenge. So what she's done, now understand this. You may say, well, you know, that's her daughter. She's a mother. She's trying to do something. She did not understand where she was. Her son is the king of the north and the head of some of the most savage men in all of Westeros. And she emasculated him because he should have killed her. For what she did, it was treason. Now, he's not going to because it's his mother. And so that's the position she put him in, where he couldn't do what he needed to do to gain his men's respect. And because she let him go, now they only had the two other Lannisters as bargaining chips for his sisters. See, he had Jaime, and he could have exchanged Jaime for Sansa and Arya. He could have done that, but she took it upon herself to let him go, and now he has to take two lesser Lannisters to the table, and he has to go against the Karstarks, go against the Umbers, in order to somehow get his little sister. So he was thinking about his sisters. She wasn't. And she wasn't thinking about him. Now, Rob forgives her. And he denies vengeance to Karstark because he wants to murder the remaining Lannisters as vengeance for his sons. Now, Rob talks about marrying his queen. And before he can really get into it, Rickard murders the two prisoners, Willem and Teon, leading to Rob having to behead him. Now, Rob was put in a position. Rob could not behead him. If Rob had let him go, then he would have showed weakness and his men would have not followed him. But Rob killed him, splitting his forces. Now, when Halster finally dies, it makes Edmure the new lord. Kat advises Rob then to make peace with the Lannisters. Make peace with the Lannisters. Kat, look at what you've done. Look at what you caused. If you had just stayed in Winterfell, none of this would have happened. Now you want me to make peace. You've emasculated me, Mom. You've taken every trump card I had in my deck out and ripped it up to shreds and dumped it in the mud. This is what you've done. And here again is where it shows Catelyn's true nature. Now, Edmure is supposed to marry Rosalyn. And this is when Rob tells her that his intention is to name Jon Snow his heir. Catelyn objects. Rob doesn't care. Because that's his brother, and he knows him. And Mom, if you don't want to get over it, it's nothing I can do. Now, he intends to have Kat remain at Seaguard under the protection of Lord Jason for the remainder of this war. Because this is really the only way, Mom, I can keep you safe, by locking you up. By locking you up, throwing away the key, so I can actually focus on maybe fighting this war now and finding my two sisters, because I can't get my father back because, oops, he's dead. So she attends Edmure's wedding at the Twins, sitting between Roose Bolton and Frey. The Freys and Boltons betray the Starks in an act of treachery, which becomes known as the Red Wedding. Now, in her last attempt to save her son's life and the last act of stupidity, she seizes Lord Frey's grandson, Aegon, and tries to trade his life for Rob's. Roose Bolton then kills Rob right in front of her. And Catelyn kills Aegon with a knife. Walder did plan to take Kat hostage. But she starts clawing at her own face. And that's when Raymond slits her throat. The Freys dump her body naked in the Green Fork, a mockery of House Tully's funeral customs. And that's the end of Catelyn Stark. Right there. And I get it. I'm tough on her, but I have to show you this. She was the catalyst for a lot of the events in a Game of Thrones. Just like if Robert would have pulled back that assassin, we would have never seen Daenerys cross the Narrow Sea. If Catelyn would have stayed her funky butt in Winterfell, the chain of events that led to the death of her husband and the beginning of the war would have never occurred. If she had treated Jon Snow like a son or like a dog instead of like a vile pestilence, maybe he wouldn't have felt the need to go to the wall. And he would have been at Winterfell to assist Rob and Theon in protecting and doing what needed to be done, where she could have stayed herself back at home, protected her young children. Or, if you felt the need to go somewhere, go down to King's Landing. Hello? Is this thing on? So, and what makes it, anybody can make a mistake. One, two, three. She's made 100 of them. Roose Bolton? I wouldn't trust Roose Bolton to clean out my toilet, let alone be a general of my son's army. Peter Baelish? You can't see that guy coming? You're with one of the best guys in the whole show, supposedly. And you get him killed? You get your son killed? Come on. You forgot about your daughters? Come on, guys. She's not Mother of the Year. She made a lot of mistakes here. But I do encourage you to look into the book, because this is not the end of Kat in the book. I'll give you a hint. She's actually brought back and she joins the Band of Brothers. Yes, Catelyn Stark is resurrected. Fun fact, Nymeria, Aya's wolf, is responsible for pulling her dead body out of the Green Fork so that Beric can resurrect her from the Lord of Light. And she was a believer in the old gods. So I've given you a lot to digest here. I've given you a lot to focus on. I do like the portrayal of Kat. I do think she made for a very interesting villain. I don't think you realize she was a villain. And when you now go back and watch the show and you see a lot of these moves, I want you to look at a lot of her facial cues. And I want you to look at some of the way her mouth would purse up in the end and how she would almost be growling and searing. And Michelle did a great job in letting you see a person who was filled with rage and anger. And as you see how she started her humble beginnings of her mother dying and having to take care of her siblings and then being her father's favorite, but also being raised very masculinely, you see why she made these issues, had these issues and made these mistakes, because she didn't know her place, because she felt she was a man. Not in the traditional sense, but she felt she was equal to a man and could make her decisions like a man and not have the repercussions they did. So, I mean, Kat, at the end of the day, Kat, you made a lot of mistakes and you killed your family. But, hey, I mean, I guess you had a good intention. You know, let me know. Inbox me. Tell me what you feel. You know, if you want to come back, I would love to debate somebody on this, because there's a lot more. There's a lot. I could probably give you a 7 or 8 part series on why Kat sucks, but I think that's already copywritten because I'm not the only one that feels this way, people. But I've had fun with you. This is another long one. I didn't plan this out to be, you know, as long as this is gone. I thought this was actually going to be like a 15 or 20 minute podcast, but it exceeded that. But did you have a good time? I know I did. Stay tuned for next week's episode, because it's part 2 in this series, and you're probably not going to be surprised at who it is, but I can't tell you now. I got to make you come back, but it's been fun. Thank you. I'm D. Paul, your master of whispers, and as always, keep coming back to Southside Westeros. Thank you for listening to Southside Westeros. We look forward to you coming back and visiting us again. If you want to email us, you can reach us at southsidewesteros@gmail.com. You can also reach us at Southside Westeros at both Instagram, Facebook, and Twitch. We're SS Westeros at Cup of Coffee and Twitter. If you want to donate to the program to keep getting this great content, please donate to our Patreon or our Cash App. Both are Southside Westeros. Valo Dohares. And may the Mother bring 7 blessings to you all.